What is happening, good people? This is Keith, and I'm here to get you high on sports. Let's go. All right. Friday. Love it, man. I love Friday. Friday is like the Tom Brady of days, right? It's the Michael Jordan of days. I know some people are going to want to talk some smack to me about Thursday or Saturday or Sunday in the fall or winter, but there is no day like Friday, right? It is the best day. There's a Friday feeling. You just wake up more alive. Considering 87% of Americans can't stand their job, can't imagine why Friday has such a special feeling. But for me, I love it because, you know, on this show, we talk fantasy football. Even on March 8th, we're talking fantasy football. It is FFF, Fantasy Football Friday. So I've got a great show. I'm going to go into, in honor of National Cereal Day yesterday, I'm going to go into my Mount Rushmore of cereal. I'm also going to give you my Mount Rushmore of NBA players in my lifetime. In honor of LeBron James scoring more points now in his career than Michael Jordan, and probably will catch Kobe Bryant, got to give a shout out to LeBron. And as the S-GOAT, second greatest of all time, LeBron James is simply ridiculous. And so I will give him nothing but credit. And he has had an unbelievable career with crazy expectations put on him. So I'm going to get into my Mount Rushmore. Also going to get a little bit into some Bulls talk. And start. They had a really nice victory there the other night against the Philadelphia 76ers. Actually looked like an NBA team at home. And I feel like they're one point guard away, or possibly a Zion Williamson away, although it looks like those dreams are fading fast. But they're really one star, and I feel like a point guard away from making some noise in the Eastern Conference. Maybe. Maybe. So I really want to talk about the Bulls' return to relevancy, what that's going to take, what that looks like, and if I'm crazy for even talking about it, for how the state of the Eastern Conference is right now in the NBA. So I'm also going to talk a little bit about the Lakers, and I'll talk about the playoffs coming up and what I foresee, and can anyone challenge this crazy Warriors team who likes to lose by 30 plus to Eastern contenders for some reason. So can anyone in the West challenge the Warriors? So I'll talk a little bit of the NBA. Also going to get into some football talk, right? That's going to transition right into fantasy football. So a lot on tap today. And so I want to jump right into National Cereal Day. Actually went to try to post this pod yesterday, had some technical difficulties, but hey, it's just me out here. It's just me out here. It's a struggle every day, folks. It's a struggle every day. So I appreciate y'all sticking with me. I think it's a good time that if you're listening to me on whatever the, if it's Apple Podcast or whatever the different software that you might be listening to this podcast, if it's right on Anchor, if you can give me any 5-star reviews, I would much appreciate it. Always also looking for feedback. So go ahead and give me any feedback on wherever you're listening to the pod. And I want to get some people's opinions here on this show. Start taking some opinions, put your name on it. You know, tell me Tom from Indiana is listening to High on Sports and he wants to tell me why I'm a fool for something, right? To a lot of folks out there, I might sound foolish. To me, I think I sound awesome. I think I sound like I know what I'm talking about. So if anyone's out there and wants to give me some love, I would definitely appreciate it. But let's fire right into National Cereal Day, right? That was 2 days ago. Today is actually International Women's Day. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the special women in my life too and just give a little shout out, right? Fellas, got to take care of your women out there. A lot of different movement is going on right now for ladies and some incredible female athletes in the world of sports. And just, I'm going to give a little shout out toward the end of the show about National Women's Day, but I got to go back in time to National Cereal Day. I love these days, by the way, especially when they're fun, when it's like National Beer Day or National Tequila Day, right? Margarita Day. And so National Cereal Day is awesome because I pretty much have been fueled by America's sugar factory the last 20 years. The sugar factory being cereal boxes. That has fueled my body good since I was a youngin'. And so in honor of National Cereal Day and in honor of LeBron James, who I believe is on the Mount Rushmore of players I've seen in my lifetime, I want to give a shout out. I'm going to give a shout out to the four best cereals I've ever eaten. So, number four, peanut butter Captain Crunch, man. Yep, I said it. For those of you out there who haven't had any peanut butter Captain Crunch, I'm telling you right now, it's amazing. You may not be a peanut butter fan, but this cereal is bomb. The milk afterward is bomb. It's totally different than Captain Crunch or even like Go-Berry Captain Crunch. So go out, get yourself some peanut butter Captain Crunch. It's awesome. Number three, Honey Nut Cheerios. Right? It's Cheerios, but sweeter. What can be better than that? Cheerios, I just found out, is the number one selling cereal in the country. And, you know, you add some honey nut to that. To that process, and boom, you got yourself some really good tasty cereal. I eat Honey Nut Cheerios when I go to the movies, try to be a little bit healthier than my crazy butter laden popcorn with all kinds of salts and flavorings on there, you know, up in that cholesterol. So why not have a little Honey Nut Cheerios, little sweet, little crunchy, good with milk. It's good dry too. So number two, Crave, man. I crave. It is awesome. Got to give a shout out to my brother right now. Crave cereal is bomb. He turned me on to it. It's crunchy. It soaks in with the milk. It's just awesome. It's a little pricey and you don't get much of it because it's like these bigger Crave little square, just delicious morsels in there. But Crave cereal is bomb. It's a newer cereal. If you haven't tried it, I highly recommend it. Go get you some Crave. And number one, yep, the people's champion, my champion, Count Chocula. Best cereal of all time. The marshmallows, the crunch, the chocolatey milk afterward. You know, you can have your Boo Berry and that pink stuff they tried to come out with. But for me, Count Chocula is awesome. That's the Mount Rushmore of cereals. I beg you to argue with me. And let me know what's your favorite out there. I want to hear. Want to hear from the people. What's your favorite cereal, man? I love cereal. Keeps me going, right? It's kind of like a drink, kind of like a food, all mixed together. It's easy. Can do it at any time. Love me some cereal. So why I'm doing the Mount Rushmore of cereal is because for me, I want to talk about the Mount Rushmore of NBA players that I've seen in my time, right? And I'm not talking about of all time. And I'm not talking about centers because I see them completely different, right? If I'm talking centers, I'll tell you right now, it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, it's Hakeem Olajuwon, it's Shaq, and it's Wilt Chamberlain for me, right? Like those are the four most dominating centers of all time. And they're totally different discussion. And because Steph Curry has basically ensured the center position gets no more run in the NBA. Now or into the future, they're all but a dinosaur. But that's the four for me for centers. But I'm going to get into the four greatest players that I've ever seen and who's on my Mount Rushmore for NBA stars in my lifetime. So that's going to be coming up right after the break. I'm going to get right into some NBA talk about my Mount Rushmore of NBA stars, talk about some Bulls, talk some Lakers, take it around the horn there with the association. So hang right with me. I'll be right back. All right, good people. I'm back and better than ever. So I just got off talking about my Mount Rushmore of cereal, and so I want to talk about the Mount Rushmore of NBA players that I've seen in my lifetime, because anytime LeBron does something that's better than Jordan, we're all going to hear it on Twitter. We're all going to hear it from all the other sports personalities out there in the universe who want to have their opinion on, is Mike better than LeBron? And there's some fools out there now saying LeBron's way better. It's not even close. And so I really look at that conversation as the greatest of a generation. It's hard for me anytime I hear this greatest of all time. It's fun because you have the acronym GOAT. So people keep wanting to go back to it. But how do you compare Joe Montana to Tom Brady? How do you compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James? It's just two different eras. The game is different. How do you compare Babe Ruth to Barry Bonds? You know, it's just so different where the games were for who is considered the greatest of that generation compared to where the game is now for who's considered the greatest of this generation. And Muhammad Ali popularized the saying greatest of all time, right? And he wasn't saying generation, he was saying of all time, and that can be argued. You know, you've got, you know, Jack Dempsey and Mike Tyson and Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano. You've got all these different boxers. Who can say who's the greatest of all time? They never fought each other. It's hard enough to say who was the best of a generation, right? Was Buster Douglas better than Mike Tyson because he knocked out Mike Tyson? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And so it's tough enough to have the conversation greatest of that generation. You know, was it Mike Tyson? Was it Lennox Lewis? Was it Evander Holyfield? I mean, from what I remember as a kid, it was Tyson all the way, but I'm sure a lot of people can argue that. So to me, you got to talk about the greatest of that generation and not just the greatest of all time. But for me, the greatest basketball players that I've seen, my Mount Rushmore goes as follows. Number four, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is just ridiculous. When it's all said and done, he may have 5-6 rings. You know, he may have 4. He might go to the Knicks and win a ring. Who knows what the hell is going to happen with Kevin Durant. But I think this year he has finally overtaken LeBron James as the greatest player in the association. And I think he's going to hold that title for another 2 to 3 years before he hands that mantle off to Giannis. But Kevin Durant is my number four. Just, I've never seen a 7-footer be able to do what he does. He plays defense. He rebounds. He passes. He has a smooth jumper. He can hit threes. You know, he, to me, is the fourth best NBA player that I've ever seen. And I think what he's done is incredible. I will never be one of these people who jumps down his throat for what he did, leaving OKC to go to Golden State. That's the NBA. LeBron made that legacy of the association. Kevin Durant's just following it. And I think finally some vindication. In my opinion, I believe Kevin Durant is now the best player in the world. I think it's still close, and LeBron still has a lot to say about that. But I think in his year 15th season, having some injuries, going to a situation where LeBron's not all in, at least right now, I think from what I'm looking at, LeBron has zero interest in playing defense. Kevin Durant still plays a little D. I feel like Kevin Durant has surpassed him, and he is number four on my Mount Rushmore. Number three, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, man, the Black Mamba, right? That dude, he was lethal. You know, anyone who's put in 81 and is sandwiched right in between all of those crazy Wilt Chamberlain games, you know, he was great on both ends of the court. He's got 5 rings. He has dominated a major city and a major landscape over the last 15 years. He was just cold-blooded. He was a little put-offish, too. His personality was surly. He didn't have the greatest charisma. He was more of an intellectual. But to me, he's been the second greatest competitor that I've ever seen on an NBA court next to Michael Jordan. His competitive spirit uplifted his team, and he was kind of an enigma. And he absolutely benefited from having Shaq on his team and from having Phil Jackson and from having all these other players, but they all wanted to be there because of Kobe, right? And Kobe winning those last 2 championships without Shaq, it really showed his greatness, because Pau Gasol was awesome, and he was a great second fiddle to Kobe for that time, and they had a really, really good team. But Kobe Bryant made that thing run, and as far as these eyes have seen, he is the third greatest NBA player I've ever seen. He's probably going to end up as the fourth highest points scorer in NBA history. But man, in his prime, Kobe was ridiculous, and he was the closest I ever saw to Michael Jordan. Just, he looked like him. You could tell he emulated him. And, you know, to me, I think he's the third greatest player I've ever seen. Number two, LeBron James. LeBron James, let me tell you something about this kid who came from the projects in Akron, had a single mother, and I know God gifted him with incredible talents, but to have the weight of the world on your shoulders in the year 2000 and to hear the year 2001 and to have the chosen one on Sports Illustrated, to have all those expectations and to do what he has now done, to me is just simply incredible. He's gone to 9 finals. He's won 3 rings. Now, I think that's where it ends for LeBron James. I don't think he puts any more hardware on his fingers. If he did so in a little bit more convincing fashion, I would have a real, real hard time arguing he's not the greatest player of all time, right? And he's going to smash all these different records. He's going to have more records, more rebounds, more assists, more points, more 3 points made, right? He's going to have all these more finals played in. He's going to have all these records and all of these statistics that are going to allow people to say he was greater than Michael Jordan. But to me, what he always lacked was a competitive spirit, was that killer instinct to just dominate. And now at this point, when he's desperate, he's not able to do what he once did. Although he is still incredible, the talent still is immense. And the IQ has always been off the charts, maybe even a higher IQ than Michael Jordan. Better court vision. But where Mike's greatness was the refusal to lose. And at the end of the day, that's what sports are about. They're about the will to win. They're about winning. And the fact Mike's got 6 rings and LeBron's going to have half of that. And the fact that LeBron has about doubled the amount of times he's lost in the finals to what he's run. It's always just going to be something that's just a markdown for me. And he's just a different player in a different era. You know, some of these stats were made. It's a wide open league now where defense is optional on over 50% of the nights. Even sometimes in the playoffs, you see some blowouts. It's more of a finesse game, and he is just a body meant to dominate in a finesse game. Right, with the floor spacing, it's not as packed up in the middle, so he's able to take control. He's as fast as a point guard. He's as big as some of the centers these days, and so his athletic ability, LeBron James, is just incredible. But the era to me is different, and some of these accolades, although absolutely worthy, it's going to take a run of 3 straight championships, which I know for a fact will not happen, for me to even consider LeBron James to be greater than Michael Jordan. So he's my number 2. He might be the greatest player or the best, most talented player I've ever seen, but the most talented does not make you the greatest. It's the same story I always will talk about with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. What Aaron Rodgers can do on a football field is talent like I've never seen before. Tom Brady is just different, though. And so there is zero argument. There is zero argument because there is something more to winning 6 Super Bowls, to going to 9 Super Bowls. There's something more to Tom Brady that makes him the greatest of all time. And Aaron Rodgers isn't even really close in most people's discussion. But for me, he's the most talented. Now, I think LeBron is the most talented player, the most God-given gifts I've ever seen. He's worked on his 3-point shot. But to me, there's also a legacy that he's left the NBA in disarray. He's made it a one-player league, unlike it's ever been before. All these guys sign 1-year contracts now. There's always the threat of leaving your franchise with a big crater in it from a superstar leaving. And part of the legacy for me, too, is LeBron James. What really was noticeable to me when LeBron James broke MJ's record a few nights ago, what was really noticeable was the lack of emotion in that stadium. It didn't come to a standstill. Time didn't stand still. If you watch when Kobe broke MJ's record, it was totally different. Totally different. Right? And so these legends of the game, when they do these great things, there's a different feel. And I feel like LeBron James' legacy will always be he had 4 different teams. He had 4 different teams, and I'm all for mobility. I'm all for mobility. It doesn't bother me in the least, but when you want to talk legacy, there is always going to be something about a person who sticks with his city through the ups and downs, who sticks with them no matter what and figures out a way to win no matter the circumstance, no matter a bad owner, no matter a bad general manager. They figure it out. Michael Jordan suffered for 10 years of 0 rings. The greatest player who ever played, but he figured it out in Chicago. They got Scottie Pippen. They added other pieces, and they finally put it all together. And there's just a sense to me that LeBron James started this team jumping, which, again, I'm all for. But when you want to talk legacy, there's just something to it that's not going to hold as much weight. Because in order to be the greatest of all time, you need statues. You need to have enshrinement. You need legendary status. And this is a dude who's left his hometown twice, who's gone to LA where he has not soaked in the culture and they have not accepted him. He did. It always felt like he was going off to college when he was in Miami. It always felt like freshman through senior year down there in South Beach, like he was on borrowed time. It never felt like he was wholly part of that community or that organization. That was D-Wade's team. And so part of that goes into being the greatest. That's why I'll put LeBron James. It was actually sad to see LeBron James getting blown out by the two seed in Denver, getting blown out at home, as the Lakers have done a lot recently. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to put LeBron on a minutes restriction. And it was really sad that there wasn't more of an outpouring of emotion coming from inside of that stadium, because to Laker fans, he hasn't done anything for them. So no one really cares. In fact, a lot of people see him as being the reason this season tanked. He got hurt, then he tried to force a trade with Anthony Davis, and that killed the mojo for everyone. And so to me, LeBron James is the second greatest of all time, and that leaves the greatest player I've ever seen in my life, Black Jesus, Michael Jordan. Michael Jeffrey Jordan. And what's crazy about Mike is you're not going to be able to go through all of these different statistics. And a lot of the kids now who weren't able to watch him night in and night out just won't get it. You know, you'll get the greatness, and there's YouTube highlights, which I think go into his legendary status. You have the shot over Craig Elo. You have the shoulder shrug when he hit six threes against Portland in the finals. You have the right hand to the left hand. You have Jumpman when he won the slam dunk contest. You have the flu game. You have the push off on what should have been his final shot. You have six rings and perfect domination. Once that team started dominating, Michael Jordan wasn't going to let go, right? So both of those championships, you have three in a row. That's hard as hell to do. That's hard as hell to win back-to-back, let alone three in a row. He did it twice. And so I know a lot of people will say he had a great team, and that's where LeBron James never had a Scottie Pippen, and they are probably right. Scottie was unbelievable, but Scottie Pippen still was a perfect Robin. Even in his prime, Scottie Pippen was not going to be the greatest player on a team that was going to win a championship. Wasn't going to happen. Now, Scottie got the Bulls close. And that year Michael retired, Scottie got the Bulls close, right? They got to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals because Scottie Pippen turned in what should have really been an MVP type of year. So Scottie Pippen was tremendous, but he still was always the second dude. And he was a perfect second dude. But he was a great two-way player. And, you know, he never really had the smoothest shot, but he got better. But he was great. But where Michael Jordan is always going to be the GOAT, to me, it's not even the 6-0. To me, it's not even really the 6, even though that's where the argument should begin and end. To me, it was just the game in and game out way will to win. What Michael Jordan was willing to do to win was incredible. And that competitive spirit, that competitive nature, the attitude that he just wanted to destroy your soul, he just wanted to end souls. That to me is what will always make him the GOAT, and where LeBron James really lacked for like a decade in this league. He was so physically gifted, but he did not want to destroy your soul. He wanted to distribute, which a lot of people will say that's what led to his greatness and maybe even being greater than Michael Jordan. But to me, it never will, because Mike is a legend, and you have to have that type of legendary status in order to be the GOAT. You have to have legendary moments. You have to have legendary stories. He did this in an era where they did not have the same sports science as they do today. They did not treat their bodies the same way as they did today. Mike has legendary stories of, you know, gambling and partying all night into the morning, then go playing ball the next day. Right? So just everything goes into the story of the greatest of all time. And the fact that, you know, he was Defensive Player of the Year in his late 30s, that he won 10 scoring titles, you know, that he could have won an MVP every year. I mean, the greatness in the golden age of basketball was so far and above beyond anything else that he, to me, will just always be the greatest. And he has this legendary status that is nearly impossible to ever go past. I don't know what it's going to take. If LeBron James isn't considered the greatest of all time with all his accomplishments and all those expectations, I don't know what type of player is going to come in. And now, A, you're going to have to leapfrog LeBron, who is hard enough to leapfrog Kobe, but B, then to still leapfrog Michael. I mean, the expectations, I don't know really what it would take, but I just don't see it happen. And that, to me, is, you know, I want to be like Mike. He was the Black Jesus for a reason. He had so many legendary quips, and you know, he had the movie and Monster Jam and the Nike commercial and the shoes, my God, the shoes, right? So there's just a lot that goes into that legendary greatest of all time status. And for me, he is the GOAT. He will forever be the GOAT, and it's going to be nearly impossible for anyone to ever jump that. So with that, going to stop right here, take a little break, and jump back right after this, talk a little Bulls, talk a little association, and then hop right into football, finish it up with some Fantasy Football Friday. So hang with me. Be right back. What is happening, good people? So I wanted to talk some Bulls. Just, I'm from Chicago. I want to make this pod a little bit more Chicago focused. And as the games start being played here with the Cubs, and as we roll into football season, I think I will gravitate. You know, I watch film of the Bears in my spare time, which these days there's like none. I have two small kids. You know, I'm married, I've got a full-time job, I'm hitting up these pods, very little spare time, but in spare time, I've already gone back and watched every throw Mitch Trubisky has made this year, and I have not yet watched the Detroit or the Giants game, because I actually wanted to see Mitch's progression and see some different things that I could figure out. So I watch all this film of the Bears, and so, I'm going to watch every single Cubs game unless there's just something I can't make it, you know, work. Kids, something that I can't do it. I'll watch every Cubs game. And as soon as the Bulls start to turn the corner, I'm going to watch as many games, you know, I'll take in 70 of their games, even from living out here in the desert. And I've been fortunate to now watch a few Bulls games, and I've probably taken in about 10 games over the last 2 months. And, you know, there is some encouraging signs. For as much shit as I'll talk about the Bulls, and rightfully so, I'm sick of the Gar Pax nonsense, and I feel like that's what it is. Just feels like a clown show is being run there on the west side of Chicago. Just feels like dudes who are not respected, that free agents won't come here because Gar Pax is just seen, you know, Gar Foreman is just seen as a scumbag, what he did to Jimmy Butler, some other moves, Johnny Pax getting into an altercation with Vinny Delgado, and, you know, doing passive-aggressive, like running coaches out of town on Tibbs and then running Tibbs out of town. And just, it just seems like a lot of nonsense in that front office. And so it's one thing to have been there almost two decades and to have not gone a little bit further, even though they had the number one pick with Derrick Rose that 1 year, they still took it about as far as I think that team, even though they were really good, about as far as they were ever going to go. Because I didn't see the Bulls knocking off the Heat anytime soon. Now, if Derek stays healthy and they keep the band together, we might see a little bit more competition if LeBron went back to Cleveland or in those other LeBron years. But it was still clear that that Heat team was better than the Bulls, and more than likely the Bulls weren't getting any farther than the finals. And so, hey, look, unless you grab one of these superstars, it is damn near impossible to put together a dynasty in the NBA. And so it's one thing for me to continuously judge the drafting of Gar Foreman and John Paxson. But the other thing, when you're bad for the majority of these two decades and you've gone through what is essentially, what, now your fourth head coach and it's your third rebuild, and you just still don't see a lot of progress being made. You still are not seeing the effects pay off of that Jimmy Butler trade. and the way all that went down and not being able to build a team around Jimmy Butler. A lot of that just goes into my frustration with this team and my anger with this team. But I like the move that they did for Otto Porter Jr. I don't think it moves the needle any, and I was pissed off about it a few weeks ago. Like, this is what you're going to do, and then you're going to come out and say, we are not even going to go after these free agents. Like, yeah, we know they don't want to come here. And there's this sense in Chicago, free agents don't want to come there because of John Paxson and Gar Forman. So no matter what type of talent they have around there, and no matter what type of money they can offer or endorsements, stars just aren't going to want to come to Chicago. It's just not seen as an attractive destination, right? Taxes are high, weather's bad, you're in the shadow of Michael Jordan. You need all of these things to be perfect in order to land that next free agent, and it's hard to do when you look like a clown college up there in the front office. It's just hard to do when you have a bad reputation, even though Pax will say, well, who's saying that? Where'd that come from? Man, it's out there. Let me tell you, players can't wait to dish dirt once they leave. Players are always taking shots back at the Bulls. You get the sense that Jimmy Butler, Bobby Portis were lied to. You have the nonsense with Nico Maritich and Bobby Portis punching Nico and all that. It always seems to be some crazy nonsense. Jim Boylan, who's like a, you know, amped up high school coach on amphetamines, you know, and so it just doesn't seem like it's working. Now, I say all that to say this. I have seen some encouraging signs the last few weeks, right? I have seen what they envisioned with Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine, right? Zach LaVine has now looked like a prolific scorer. I watched him in many games against good defensive teams where he basically is able to score at will. Now, he's awful on defense, and he'll never even attempt to be a good defender. And so there's a struggle there because they don't have enough offense to keep up with some of these better offensive teams if they're not going to play better defense, which is weird because Zach LaVine's so athletic. The talent is immense, right? He jumps out the gym. He can shoot the three. You know, he's at the 34% mark or so with the three-point shot. And so him and Lauri Markkanen seem like a 1-2 punch. I like Wendell Carter. I don't love the move. I don't know what he can be. You know, what I've seen the last few weeks that's working a lot is Robin Lopez, who is a steady veteran. You know, he'd be a welcomed addition. I'm shocked the Bulls couldn't have traded him, you know, to a Warriors or to a Celtics or something. Someone that has a late first round pick for Robin Lopez seemed ideal. A dude that can give you 15 to 20 if you want it. You know, he's agile in the paint. He can shoot a little bit. And he, you know, he's really solid on the screen game. Comes, sets the screen, knows what to do, knows where to be. And so I was shocked they didn't move him. But I've seen a lot of that in the last few weeks of Robin Lopez playing this screen game with Zach LaVine. And they did it perfectly against the 76ers. I think Lopez was the second leading scorer. And LaVine put in 39. And, you know, had the last second layup for the victory because of an awesome screen and play that was set by Robin Lopez. And so that to me is what Wendell Carter has to become. And he's an athletic center. And he's a guy who I think who probably has a better jump shot, you know, than someone like a Robin Lopez or the Robin Lopez's of the world. But I just don't know what Wendell Carter is going to be. Is he going to be, you know, one of the core pieces and a key defensive player who can help on the backside with Lauri, who I think is okay defensively, but will never be great. You know, so I'm just not quite sure what Wendell's going to be, but he's part of that core. And so really now with OPJ on the wing, you know, who is a solid defender. He's a very solid defender. He can knock down a three. He's got a high 3-point percentage, you know, and OPJ's looked a little bit better than I remembered him. You know, he's a 6'10 dude, so he's got some height and he's got some game, right? He's a solid wing. He's a solid wing. Now what really the Bulls need is a point guard to put it all together, right? And the Bulls just so happen to have a couple of them. There's a couple of point guards in this upcoming draft, none more impressive than Ja Morant, right? Ja Morant looks to be an athletic freak, looks to be a Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook type of dude, jump, you know, nose to the rim type of dude, gets the entire armpit up over the rim, has highlight reel dunks, and also a dude with court vision that's willing to pass. And so to me, I think if the Bulls can land in the top two, I think you really can start to put something together next year. I really do. I think you could possibly have a legit superstar in Ja Morant, Zach LaVine off the two, another dude who can handle the ball well. So you're going to have a distributor at the point and an athletic freak, a dude who can get to the rim, a guy who does play defense, even though that always is going to have to improve for rookies. So you're going to have OPJ, Otto Porter Jr. at the wing, Lowry at the four, Wendell Carter at the five. That's pretty solid, man. That's pretty solid. I could see that being a group that could compete for an eighth seed in the East next year and could start to put something together, something better together in the year 2020, 2021. Now, this is all dependent on what happens in the lottery, right? But I'm talking about getting the Bulls back to relevancy, and they need to hit on one of these three dudes in the draft. They need to hit on Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, or RJ Barrett. I think getting Cam Reddish, getting that guard from Vanderbilt, I just don't think they're going to move the needle all that much in this rebuild. They're going to have to secure a top three, and right now they're sitting at the fourth worst record in the NBA. So they got about a 10% chance of landing that number one overall pick. The top three have a 12.5% chance, and then it gets slotted in after that, right? So to me, they're going to have to hope and pray, because I always felt like they have a better team. I felt like they had a better team this year that could put in 30, 35 wins. That really is what I felt. I thought that the Bulls could put in 30, 35 wins this year, and they could, you know, perhaps compete for an eight seed. But injuries and just, again, the mess with the front office and Hoiberg couldn't put stuff together. It just did not work out. And so they need to get fortunate, and they need to find another player in this draft that can help them move the needle moving forward. And so it's my contention, if you don't get Zion Williamson, I would like Ja Morant. I like him better than RJ Barrett. I just think he has a game that translates. I think he could be, you know, he could be a Russell Westbrook clone. He really could. He really could. He's that fast. He's that dynamic. And I think he looks to pass and distribute a little bit more, right? And then I feel like when the shot clock's running down, he's just a dude that could just dribble past you and explode to the rim. So I like him more than Barrett, a guy who I see is kind of a slasher, more of your typical two-guard, a dude who every scout out there says has superstar, NBA superstar ability. I wouldn't mind if the Bulls got him. I just don't see him fitting in as seamlessly as Ja Morant. And, you know, Zion Williamson, forget about it. Who cares about fit? You get Zion and it's, you know, Wendell Carter then becomes a backup or a trade piece or something. You know, Zion would be your four, your center, four or five, doesn't really matter. But yeah, Zion's so gifted athletically. He's just a freak of nature that he's just going to instantly transform any team he goes to. If he goes and he pairs up, let's say, in the Knicks' ultimate scenario of landing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and Zion Williamson, you know, to me right there, those three dudes right out the gates are going to be in competition for, you know, the top three seeds in the East for the next, you know, 8 years or whatever the contracts are for those three dudes. So if he goes to a team like that, Zion is going to be that third guy as a rookie who, you know, can help propel an already good team with a lot of talent to something greater. And if he goes to a team like, say, the Suns, he's just going to dominate as a superstar in Phoenix for a long, long time. He'd be a four next to DeAndre Ayton. They'd have Devin Booker. They've got a few other pieces, but I feel like then other shooters would want to come and play with Zion. So he's just, to me, right now, as athletic and his size, you know, he's a transformational talent. He really is. He's probably the best talent since Kevin Durant, right? The best known talent coming out of college since Kevin Durant, if not even LeBron James. Seriously, because he's even more LeBron than Durant. He doesn't have the jump shot right now. But Zion Williamson looks like a freak and looks like a transformational talent. So if the Bulls are going to get back to relevancy, for me, it's either Zion or Ja Morant is who I'm really praying they land. If they get RJ Barrett, that won't be a bad thing. I don't know how much he moves the needle because he kind of reminds me of a Zach LaVine, right? He's that type of player. He's 6'6", 6'7", might be a wing. You know, who knows on defense with these young kids? He's a dude who is gifted, so I think he would help. But I really feel like if you don't land this transformational talent in Zion, the Bulls need to end up with Ja Morant. And if they don't, they need to find the next best point guard. Right now, you just want to keep drafting talent, and I understand that. There's always room there, but the glaring need of Chris Dunhan, I call him Chris Dunhan, right? Because he's like Chris Duhon. He's a backup point guard. Can't believe he was a number 5 overall pick. I don't know what's happened to this kid. He looks like he could be an athletic freak and could be a pass-first guard that can get to the rim at will and is willing to play defense, but injuries, inconsistencies, he just looks like a career backup at this point. Chris Dunn doesn't have a good enough jumper to ever really, you know, make his mark in the NBA as a star, and so to me, I think he's destined as a career backup, and maybe if you land one of these, if you land Zion Williamson, maybe you package, Wendell Carter and Chris Dunn with some other guys and try to bring in a backup, you know, try to bring in a solid point guard to run point for this team. So that's what I feel like the Bulls are going to have to start doing, is finding whatever God they believe in and praying to that God that they end up with Zion or Ja Morant. That's what I'm praying for. RJ Barrett would be okay. I just don't see him fitting as well on this team to make a mark. And I feel like him and LaVine are going to battle to be ball dominant. And so one of them to me would have to go. I don't see that working out. And so that's where my fingers are crossed. But I want to see the Bulls relevant again. It's a sad state in the NBA. You have the three top markets, the Lakers, the Bulls, and the Knicks. They're all pathetic, right? The Lakers would have been a top three place, if a top three pick destination, if LeBron James doesn't go there. And even with him going there, they're going to end up as the 10 seed in the West. The Knicks are the worst team in the NBA, and the Bulls are the fourth worst team. So you don't have a lot of big markets right now carrying the NBA, and it shows. It shows in the ratings. It shows in the product. It shows in the enthusiasm. And the NBA is better when the Lakers, Knicks, and Bulls are good. Right in the 90s, early 90s, you had the Lakers, the Bulls, obviously, the Knicks then. They made two finals, right? Or made one final, sorry. They always came up against the Bulls, but they were the Bulls' fiercest competition for like 5 years, right? So I'm hoping that those three franchises turn it around and bring a little bit more back to the NBA. So I'm going to take a little break. On the other side of the break, talk a little bit of football, talk some fantasy football. A lot to get into today. It's a little longer pod. I got a little bit more time, so look out. And so hang with me right now, and I'll be right back. What's happening, good people? Let's just get right into everyone's favorite subject, taking a left-hand turn here from the association, and let's talk about the Shield. Oh, man, I got so wrapped up with baseball and with Bulls and with the NBA and cereal. Constantly. Not like this, I want some cereal now. It's like 3 days of wanting cereal. Even though this just happened yesterday, it's going to carry into tomorrow. I'm going to hit the grocery store and get like 4 different kinds of cereal I haven't had in forever and just be 11 years old again and happily enjoying something sweet and crunchy and with milk. So, but I do want to give a shout out before I get into the NFL. It is International Women's Day. And, you know, I think it's so important in all walks of life. And especially as males, to understand, you know, the fight that females have had to go through in this country and still continue to go through around the world. I don't think we really understand as men the fight that women have had to go through for equal rights and to just compete in the marketplace. And it is as good as it has ever been. And there's still so much room to grow for how we treat women, for how we respect women, for the opportunities that we allow for women. And so being International Women's Day, I want to give a shout out to my beautiful wife, to my mother, to my mother-in-law, and to my beautiful daughter, because it really is all about her future now at this point. And, you know, I do believe the future is female. I believe they're going to be the gender that saves this race. And we have to continuously in this society continue to respect females and continue to let their voices be heard, continue to encourage them to fill the void of where their voices have not been before, and to continue allowing them to grow and succeed and offer them an equal opportunity like every other breathing soul. And so in order to do that, we're going to have to get them on par with the economics, paying them as much. And so I really just want to give a shout out to all the females out there in my life, all the women out there who are challenging the status quo, who continue to inspire me to continue to do great things, and just keep it up. Keep it up. My daughter's looking at you. My daughter's watching you. She's going to continue to watch you. And so I really want to give a heartfelt shout out there to women, all the women in your life, for my listeners on this national or this International Women's Day. So that being said, I'm going to turn it right into the NFL and a sport that just made news for Bruce Arians saying he would like to see a full-time female coach be on his staff at some point. And I'm all for it. I think it was great when women were able to, be referees in the NBA. And I know at one time there was a female coach on the Arizona Cardinals under Bruce Arians during the preseason. He brought her in for a while, and there's no reason there really shouldn't be. You know, there's female coaches on an NBA staff, and you're going to see more and more of that. I don't know if we'll ever see the day when a female will be playing in the NFL, but we might. There was a huge recruit of a female to a Division I school, I believe. Just a couple weeks ago, there was news on that. And so we might one day. And really, to me, it should be like anything else. It really should be about anything. It's about results. So if there's a female who can do just as good as any male, say at a cornerback position or maybe a receiver position, I'm not quite sure. The female stature tends to just be smaller than men. So I would, I would be concerned a little bit, just like I would with any talent evaluation of an NFL male. I'd be a little concerned about injury, but it would be the same evaluation to me as like Kyler Murray. Seriously, like if there was a female lighting up NCAA at Oklahoma somewhere and she was fast and she had good hands, you might see that. You might see that. I don't know if we're anywhere close to seeing a female even at a top Division I school. But there's really no reason women shouldn't be involved all over sports. And I know that over the last decade, maybe even couple decades, more and more women have entered the sports universe that was just completely dominated by men. And I'm for diversity everywhere. I'm for diversity of thought. And I'm for, any woman's opinion in any industry. So I just hope there's just more and more opportunity for women out there. So speaking of opportunity, we are entering the crazy days of the NFL. It's what makes it so much fun. It's what makes me doing this podcast fun. It's what makes Sports Talk Radio fun. It is the crazy days of the NFL. It is NFL free agency. There's a lot of trade talk going around right now. And it's the NFL draft, where it's nothing but smoke screens. It is just fake news upon fake news upon fake news. Like, that is the industry where you can apply the term. Not to the president when it's real news he just doesn't like and he says fake news. No. And the NFL, around this time, it is fake news and they do it on purpose, right? And so I just came across a free agency list and there's a lot of good players. There is a lot of good players out there in the free agency list on both sides of the ball. And I'm really interested, how much money does Stephen Gostkowski make? Right? I was shocked that the Patriots didn't franchise him. And if I'm the Bears, I go all in. I go all in on that. Stephen Gostkowski is one of the greatest kickers in NFL history. He's had an unbelievable run in New England the last decade. He would understand how to kick in Soldier Field. He's a gamer. He's been in every big game you can imagine. He was a perfect fill-in for Vinatieri when Vinatieri left. And I think Gostkowski could have his second career with the Bears for the next decade. And if I'm the Bears, I go all in. And I know it's crazy that you're going to have to allocate like $2.5 million to Cody Parkey in a stupid 4-year signing. I have no idea what Pace was thinking there. And his lack of being able to put together a solid field goal kicker is just egregious. So as well as Ryan Pace has done, you know, the biggest moves that he made are the Mitch Trubisky thing. I'll never forgive him for, even though I hope Mitch proves me wrong, and never figuring out the kicker position after he ran Robbie Gould out of town. Now, I'm not saying that it was wrong to run Robbie Gould at the time. I knew he was mouthy. He loved Lovie Smith. That's where he got his start. He was a captain, and he was seen as the mayor. And maybe he was spouting off at the mouth and talking about, I've got to feed my family. And it just started to annoy people. And Pace just wanted to start fresh. I get it. But then if you can't come up with something even close to how good Robbie Gould has been the last 3 years, Robbie Gould has made 82 of 85 field goals, people. 82 of 85 the last 3 years since leaving Chicago. That's crazy. And if the Bears had someone like that, I believe they would have knocked in that 43-yarder against Philly. I believe they would have gone to L.A. and gave us a hell of a game. I don't know if they would have won, but I feel like they would have gave us a hell of a game there in Los Angeles. And so I'm always going to be sad we were deprived of that. And I hope Ryan Pace, man, if I'm Ryan Pace and I'm looking at this roster, I know it's important to keep Adrian Amos. I know it's important to find a running back that could be more of a three-down back for Matt Nagy's offense. I know it's important to find offensive line depth and cornerback depth always. I know it's important to keep Bryce Callahan, but is there anything more important than getting a Steven Goskowski type who's going to be a top three kicker, who's going to miss maybe one or two field goals, zero extra points, be a gamer? If I'm Ryan Pace, I go all in. And if he wants $3.5 million over 3 years, pay the man. I know it's crazy to pay $6 million next year to the kicking position, but that's the bed you made. And I feel like you just got to work around it. We need that position. In the NFL, each game is so close. It really comes down to a field goal so often. It comes down to a kick so often. And I know many people want to legislate kicking right out of the NFL. And I'm welcome to that conversation, to that argument. There's merit to that conversation. But to me, if I'm the Bears, there is really no bigger move, right? There is no bigger move. I would go all in and get Goskowski and call it a day. You know, try to fill in some pieces then with your lower-level free agents. There's quite a few of them out there. You can build some depth. But the Bears aren't going to be able to go in on Le'Veon Bell or on Tevin Coleman. I don't know what the market's going to be for a Spencer Ware. I know he would be great, though, in the blue and orange coming from that Andy Reid system. So there are some players out there. You know, they could pick up a one-year guy, say, for like $4 million as a defensive pass rusher. I don't know what the market will be for Clay Matthews, but there's quite a few solid defensive pass rushers, edge rushers out there that may suppress Clay Matthews' market. But there is free agency in the NFL is so interesting because I don't feel like that's the way you win. But oftentimes, picking up some of these guys may just look like nothing moves to the average fan, but they really end up shining in a different role under a different coach in a different system. And I was thinking about Kyle Van Noy, right? I mean, he was, you know, basically a nothing player on the Lions, and that was an under-the-radar pickup by the Patriots a few years ago. And look how great that's turned out. You know, I think you can find in almost any championship team, you're going to find these under-the-radar free agents that didn't get a lot of fanfare, but they really helped to push that team to where it needs to be, whether it's, you know, some backups for depth. There's always injuries on the offensive line, defensive line, the secondary. And so you can really find some solid moves. So it's always such a fun time for me, NFL free agency. You've got the combine going on, just happened, and you've got the NFL draft to look forward to. And so I've heard a lot of news on Jordan Howard getting traded from the Bears. And first of all, I don't know what you're going to get for Jordan Howard. You know, I like Jordan Howard. I think in the right offense, he's a beast. He's a dude who doesn't miss games. He's a wrecking ball to take down. And last year was really very disappointing for me. Not just because he didn't fit, but something was just off with Joho. Something was just off with Joho. He had sweet feet, man. When I went back and watched tape of 17 halfway through the 2018 season, I said, what's going on with Jordan Howard? You know, is it the offensive line or, you know, what's that? Why is he falling down so much and something changed? I don't know if he was injured. I don't know if the playbook just didn't suit him. I don't know if he couldn't get into rhythm, but something was wrong with Jordan Howard. And so I think any team that gets Jordan Howard should know who they have, should know what they want out of him, and is going to get at least 1 year. He's got one more year left on his deal. And to me, this is a dude who can still get you 1,212. You know, he could rush for 1,200 yards easily and 12 touchdowns easily. He's a bruiser inside the three. Like I say, he's a for such a big dude, a lot of his tape from 16 and 17 will show he's got sweet feet. He really does. He has sweet feet in the hole. And the Bears ran this play under John Fox where they would like it was a counter to the left, and Jordan Howard just made it look easy, and he'd rip off, you know, 8, 9, 12, 16-yard runs. Now, one thing that always drove me nuts with Jordan Howard is he doesn't break enough tackles for me. You know, he fell down. There was like three plays in that playoff game against the Eagles where if Jordan Howard makes a dude miss, breaks a tackle, it's a different game. He flips field position, and that's a whole different game. And so when you watch his tape, that can be a little bit frustrating. But Jordan Howard has some talent, and I don't know what a team's gonna give up for Jordan Howard. I know he doesn't fit in Chicago. It's the worst-kept secret on the roster from Matt Nagy. And, you know, to me, you would have to go to, like, what the Jaguars wanted to do with Leonard Fournette. You know, it's kind of what the Vikings did with Adrian Peterson all those years. You have to go to a line to me that's not a, you know, kind of an option based line that is more of a power run game that's going to sit back and want to play defense, want to throw the ball 20 times a game and just run the rock. That's the type of squad that's going to want to take in Jordan Howard. He doesn't have good hands. He is not a good pass catcher. He looked like he had stone hands often. So the Bears really do need a dude who's like Damian Williams on Kansas City. I don't know if that dude's a bell cow, but you want that type of skill set, right? You want that type of skill set. And those dudes are out there, right? I like TJ Yeldon. I think he's got that skill set. I don't think he's great, but I think he has that skill set where he could potentially fit well in this offense. I like Spencer Ware. I love Spencer Ware. I feel like he's almost the Jordan Howard, but with better hands and knows this offense. But I think his market's going to be higher if Kansas City doesn't want to just straight bring him back. And I don't know, you know, if the Bears are going to be able to get away with the $3, $4 million a year contract for Spencer Ware. But I'd love Spencer Ware. The big thing with Spencer, he gets hurt. He gets hurt, but I think he would be terrific in Chicago as the bell cow to play right alongside Tariq Cohen. You know, there's quite a few backs in the draft. I love Dexter Williams out of Notre Dame. I love him, man. I think he's going to be a late round find for players, for teams. I think he's going to be, you know, in the fifth, sixth round, and he can make a mark. This is a dude who can catch the ball, who, you know, runs with power. He has speed. I like Dexter Williams. He got in trouble on Notre Dame. Otherwise, he might have more fanfare, and he kind of flew under the radar for the first few years. But look out for Dexter Williams. I'm telling you right now, GMs, if you're out there, come holla. I got some other gems for you, but I won't unleash them quite yet. It's not quite that draft show yet. So it's just such a fun time, though, for the NFL. Free agency is just so fun. I'm very interested to see where Antonio Brown goes. I'm interested to see where Le'Veon Bell goes. It feels like Nick Foles is going to end up in Jacksonville. And if you look out there, there's some interesting players, man. Cordarrelle Patterson is out there. He's an interesting guy for the Bears to be kind of that fourth or fifth receiver, someone who you might, you know, get the ball to, I don't know, 2-3 times a game, can do some different things. But the Bears are basically locked in. They've got Anthony Miller running in the slot. Taylor Gabriel's kind of their rocket, that Y receiver, right? And then you've got Allen Robinson, who's just your dude. He's just a dude. And I think he's going to have a monster year. Look out for Allen Robinson in fantasy this year, folks. I think Mitch talked about going to the player instead of the play, which is encouraging to me. It's all about matchups in the NFL, and the more Mitch can identify Allen Robinson's going to beat this dude and get him the ball, I think that could be a magical, magical combination this year. And I'm looking for like 90 balls out of A-Rob. I'm looking for that 1,000-yard mark. maybe 1,100. If I were to put it right now, I would say Allen Robinson should be in the 90 catch, 1,150 yards, and I'll call it 9 touchdowns. That to me seems legit. Injuries, everything, but I feel like coming back now off of that ACL, comfortable in the system, Mitch getting more comfortable with A-Rob, I feel like he's going to do some big things next year. So that's just me, and you know, I'm right more often than I'm wrong, but there are times I'm wrong still. So going through the free agency list, though, there's a lot of good players out there, man. The safeties are crazy. The safeties are just nuts. Landon Collins and Eric Weddle now and Adrian Amos and the Honey Badger, right? So you've got Tyrann Mathieu. You've got just a bunch of talent out there at the safety level. So if the Bears don't go with Adrian Amos, you know, either one or two things I feel like happens there. I feel like dudes now at the top suppress that market and Amos doesn't get paid as much as he probably should. Because I think he's a hell of a player. He's just not much of a ball hawk. But I think Amos fits in perfectly with the Bears. And I'm praying that the Bears can re-sign him. They can get him back and they can get him for a nice price. Because I feel with this safety market that's out there, man, I just could not believe some of the names on this list. And so I really, really hope the Bears can find a way to keep Adrian Amos. I hope they can find a way to keep Callahan and then get Stephen Gostkowski. If they do all that, boom, I'm done. No, I wouldn't even need a Spencer Ware or anything else in the backfield. Address that in the draft. You can find kind of these dudes, maybe even a Benny Cunningham, who I know is just a average plotter or whatever, but you can find kind of this, you know, that Tyquan Mizell. You can find these running backs, right? So, you know, it's always interesting. The Bears don't have a lot of room to work this year. They don't have a lot of money after years of having one of the higher caps. And they always do such an excellent job. They've got one of the best cap masters in the NFL. But they've finally arrived on some talent. And they paid Allen Robinson. They paid Khalil Mack huge money. Yeah, there's a lot of money in that offensive line. So they finally have some talent. They paid Kyle Fuller. They paid Prince Amukamara. Trevathan's in line for a contract extension. So maybe you save a little money there and increase it on the back end. So it'll be really fascinating what the Bears do and what some of these teams that have a bunch of money, like the 49ers and the Jets and the Colts, what they're all able to do. And really, what happens with Antonio Brown? You know, does he go to one of these teams? I heard just last night he was going to the Bills. It was a done deal. But Antonio nixed it and something happened. Not that he can nix it, but he basically said, I'll sit out if you banish me to Buffalo with Josh Allen. Oh, man. Good luck with that. That would be hilarious to me. That would be just hilarious if he went to one of those teams. Go play for Josh Allen, bud. You know, go play for the Cardinals. So I feel like that would be just hysterical. So after all of this, even though I love AB, it would make him absolutely irrelevant. And I don't want to see that from Antonio Brown, but I think that would be the ultimate FU from the Steelers, and it would just be funny. So it'll be fascinating to see where Antonio Brown ends up. And I hope for the NFL that he does end up in a place that's at least interesting, say like San Francisco. You know, they're not going to be contenders next year. You still don't know what you have in Jimmy Garoppolo. But it would be fascinating, would it not, for Antonio to go where some of the greatest wide receivers have ever played, Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens. If Antonio Brown went there with Jimmy Garoppolo, with Kyle Shanahan, that to me would be awesome. It would be so much fun to see. And I don't know if they'll make it happen. I'm not hearing a lot out of San Fran. It would also have been so fun to see Indianapolis get in on this. Right? That would have been a lot of fun, but I don't feel like they're going to want to take on a $20 million receiver either. But, you know, if you put T.Y. Hilton, Antonio Brown with Andrew Luck, oh, man, look out. For real, look out. That would be deadly. And I, you know, seeing what I saw from the Colts and their change on defense last year, I'd have them right back in the AFC Championship against the Patriots. And then best of luck with all that. Because, you know, no pun intended, but best of luck to Andrew Luck. Because he has not fared well against the Patriots in his time. So free agency around the corner. NFL is always so fun. And I'm going to get, this is going to be my last segment here. And I'm going to talk a little fantasy football and just end on a fantasy football Friday, the FFF. I'm going to end on one of those notes and really just talk about, the top players coming up in this NFL fantasy draft and who I see in the argument to end all arguments, who should go first in NFL draft. So hang with me. I'll be right back and we'll close out on this fantasy football Friday and you can get your little buzz on your Friday. Get nice and high on sports with me. I appreciate that. And I love talking it with y'all and I hope that you will reciprocate and interact with me and we can move this show on to the next level. So thank you. Hold right there. I'll be right back. Talk a little fantasy. What is happening, good people? I've had a lot to say today. So, and I could talk all day. We could do this all day, every day. Hey, you know what? Maybe I just will. So I aim for 5 days a week on the pod because I just love talking sports. And it's only going to get better. I promise you that. It will only get better here on High on Sports. We're going to get other people involved, other people engaged. I'm working on it right now, trying to get some interesting interviews, some guests on the show, and really take this show to that next level. So I can't do it without your help and support. So I appreciate anyone who's listening to this, who gives me any kind of time, any kind of play. Thank you so much. It's fun and I enjoy doing it. Hope you enjoy listening. So let's get to my favorite time of the week. Fantasy Football Friday. Man, I miss some fantasy. You know, I really should have just done this AAF just to get the monkey off my back. Should have really got into that AAF, but really for me, we're at that time of year where we're going to start having the debate on the number one overall pick. And this year's going to be just like any other. There's going to be room for arguments from all sorts of different players. And last year it was Todd Gurley, and rightfully so, and he lived up to expectations. That was the second year in a row. He was the top scoring running back in the league. However, I do not feel like Todd Gurley is going to be number one next year. And I think he'll still be good, but the arthritis in that knee and his injury history and the usage, it scares me. I'll be honest, it scares me. Now, if you still get 14 games out of Todd Gurley, 14 healthy games out of your 16-game season, I feel like you should still be doing fine. The question is, does he play 14 plus or does he play more around the 8 to 10 mark? Is there another serious injury lurking for Todd Gurley? If this knee injury and this arthritis didn't pop up, I probably would have to consider him again for the number one overall pick. But for me, my money this year is on Zeke. I feel like Ezekiel Elliott is going to take back the reign. I feel like in all formats that he's going to catch 50 balls. And I feel like he can put together one of the greatest performances of any running back this year. I really do. He's going on a contract year. That offense is set to do great things. The offensive line should be healthier. They'll have the threat of Amari Cooper. Dak's another year comfortable in that offense. And for my money, I'm going Zeke. The second guy, that I would say, and I talk PPR usually. I feel like I can talk about some of these guys, and PPR really shouldn't swing much at the top, you know, because just think about it. Say a dude who gets 30 catches as opposed to 60, that's 30 extra points on the season, but that's really only like 2 points extra a game. And so you're going to have a guy like Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara who have these huge receiving numbers, but they're not going to do enough, in my opinion, to be great in both formats. They'll have these monster games because when you rack up 12 catches, 200 total yards, and 2 touchdowns, you're going to have a monster game. And that's where PPR really starts to add to the mix when you get touchdown-like numbers. Anything like 6 catches or higher is just awesome. And I love PPR because I like points. You know, it's why I don't like kickers in my leagues now. So, but really to me, my dark horse, and probably isn't even so much of a dark horse, but who could give Ezekiel Elliott a run for his money is Saquon Barkley, right? I think a lot of people would agree it's going to be Saquon Barkley. The question really becomes, does that offensive line improve? Is he slightly better than the Eli of the last 5 years? You know, probably not. But I think another year of just pounding the rock to Saquon, I think that's going to be your choice, is between Zeke and Saquon. And my guy, I like Melvin Gordon. I love Melvin Gordon. I wouldn't mind taking him number one overall. I just don't think you have to. You know, I feel like he can drop to the third spot. And so any of these dynasty drafts where you're doing trades, I don't think you got to swap that out. And I don't know if there's going to be much difference between any of those three. And number four, I like Todd Gurley. But to me, Melvin Gordon's injury history and Todd Gurley's injury history is just too much to take. It's just too much to take. Now, Le'Veon Bell is going to be back, and he's going to have something to say about that top spot. People are going to have concerns there. Loving Le'Veon at that 4, 5, 6 mark. I like David Johnson because I feel like his value will be down and it will be higher this year, no matter if Josh Rosen has one more year in the system with Cliff Kingsbury or if Kyler Murray goes to the desert. I still feel like David Johnson has a bounce back year. The Cardinals have some money to spend. I say they pour as much as they can into the offensive line. And so the battle really to me is going to come down to Saquon or Zeke. I like Zeke. I could see why you say Saquon, because he's probably going to have 30, 40 balls more than Zeke. So in PPR, I can see that. But I still don't feel like Shurmur is going to pound the rock as much as we know Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan will with Zeke. Like inside the 5, inside the 10, it's just Zeke all day. And the beauty of Zeke is he just gets run constantly. That's a team that wants to play defense, that wants to have a very efficient passing game. And so to me, Zeke's just always going to get run. He doesn't get hurt, or he hasn't yet, doesn't have an injury history. And he's just a workhorse and just perfect for the place he's in. And I feel like he gets the title back next year. But to me, it's between Saquon and Zeke. Take your pick, pick your poison. I know it's always a tough choice. It's why I tend to like the 5th, 6th, 7th pick to be in the middle of each round. I feel like you get a lot of value at those picks. Some guys go a little too high sometimes and you get a lot of value, but I can make a draft work from anywhere. And as we get closer to fantasy football season, I want to start doing some of those examples, doing some mocks from the 1. You know, what's that team look like? Doing some mocks from the 12. So you get picks 12 and 13. What's that look like? But I can't wait to start getting into these conversations, picking some dark horses for the week. I'm going to have to see how the schedule comes out, but that's another reason why I like Zeke, is that division's just not great on defense other than Dallas. You know, Washington can be had on the ground. The Giants can absolutely be had. They just traded Olivier Vernon, right? And so there's the Eagles can be had on the ground. And so the defenses to me aren't great. I don't think the Eagles bounce back to where they were in 2017. So I like Zeke. I like Saquon. I like Melvin Gordon, number 3. That would be my ranking as of right now. I would have Gurley 4 and Le'Veon 5. That would round out my top 5 right now. That's subject to change, but I think it's going to basically be those 5, maybe shifting up, shifting down a little, depending on where Lev Bell goes, where he ends up. But that's really not even the fun of fantasy, right? The fun of fantasy is finding these diamonds in the rough, is getting back on the Jerick McKinnon train, you know, is getting on the Nick Chubb train, you know, so to see where these rookies are going to end up. That's where we're really going to start to understand what this running back class looks like for fantasy football in 2019. But if you're putting money on it, I like Zeke number 1. I'll stand by it. Argue with me if you must. I love to have that conversation. We can have the back and forth. But that's my little taste of Fantasy Football Friday. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I try to keep these to about 45 minutes to an hour max, sometimes even shorter. I'm someone who loves micro bursts of information, someone who likes to get in, get out, give me a lot of good stuff and bounce. And so I'm going to try to keep these, you know, as short and as impactful as possible, because that's how I like it. That's how I like my sport. So Thank you all again. If you can give me any 5 stars on any platform that you're listening to this podcast, I'd appreciate it. If you have any comments for me, send me an email, keith@keithdevore.com. Be happy to have some back and forth. And until then, have a good, happy Friday. Congratulations on International Women's Day to all the ladies out there. And just keep on keeping on. And I appreciate you joining me. This is Keith with High on Sports. Till next time, be well.